Hi, welcome to Pault on Power, Power System Design's podcast on the latest in power and power design. I'm your host, Alex Pault, and today I've got Larry Blackledge. He's Active Semi's CEO. Active Semi is a company that's addressing this whole new space of smart energy and devices and systems. Now, Larry, welcome to the show. I got a whole bunch of questions to ask to the point I almost forget to introduce myself and introduce you to the show. Go ahead. Come on board.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate you having us on the show.
Well, the whole thing about smart energy, it is such a huge thing. It's like the industry talking about it is like the blind man and the elephant. You know, I see one part, you see one part, he sees another part. Let's start from where you see it. From where Active Semi is sitting, what is your view on the marketplace, the industry of smart energy?
Well, at a high level, if you look at energy in the world, there's more energy sources being produced because there's so much consumption, meaning nuclear power plants or coal fire, gas fire, and so forth, solar. At the same time, the dream is to take the energy usage we have today, whether it's your refrigerator, washer, dryer, TV, house lighting, and reduce the amount required, which then, in turn, of course, reduces the need for building more of these plants and so forth. And the infrastructure itself, the wires, the cabling, long-distance power lines. So the smarter we can make an end device, the more efficient it can be, and communicating back to the power source, whether it's a nuclear energy plant or a solar farm. And our intention and our ability comes from, the analog semiconductor world, and we could recognize early on that it needed to have the digital control of analog power. So in a smart home, for instance, if it's truly wired correctly, then every device in your home is reporting its power needs. Things like washer dryer can run off cycle in the middle of the night and save energy. Power plants can better predict their usage model and during peak load times can take devices offline that aren't required right then. So the intention is to have a somewhat of a central brain that's then networked, throughout a neighborhood, throughout a house, down to maybe even a wearable device that you have, and then report it to you and let you have control over it. So all of this may report back to, say, your phone at some point to allow you to better control your environment.
So, Larry, you're focusing on this, especially on the smart side then. There are some companies who are focusing a little bit on the smarts and a little bit on the energy efficiency aspect of it. You're trying to help companies improve their control methodologies to improve the operating efficiencies of their systems.
That is correct. So what we create is, with our power application controller, is a platform whereby it's scalable. It goes from a 5-watt phone charger up through a 10-kilowatt electric automobile battery charger. And it goes from 0 to 600 volts. So it gives a platform in a 32-bit programmable environment that can go into many different end equipment. And this is exactly why LG Electronics has invested in us just recently. They own a part of the company now.
Well, that's true. Smart systems are going to especially impact literally impact everything, but it'll be most apparent to the consumer level and automotive industries.
Yes. So each of those, obviously as gas cars convert more and more to electricity, there's going to be more electrical power draw, more requirement for the car to be smarter and the charging system to the car to be smarter. So our desire is to not have what we call a bag of chips. So today, if you want to do this design, you grab a microcontroller and 5 or 7 analog chips, and this creates what we call the bag of chips. And it runs anything from a refrigerator to a car charger. And what we've done is draw it down to a single device that has a unique programming platform where it's consistent across voltages and current levels.
Well, Larry, one of the things that I've always wondered, and I've wondered aloud in print even, all of these chargers, let's even just think about basic device chargers. everything that's got a USB plug on the end that plugs into the wall, it should be a two-way intelligent connection. I mean, you've got an intelligent connector on one end of the system already. You've got every single one of those chargers has got a USB connector on it.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And this is a really a key thing that's I'll say, internally growing in the industry. And I think, you know, by a year from now, you'll see that a lot of the new devices have it. You really want to tell from the wall charger into the phone itself, you know, what is the power demand it needs, and then ramp that accordingly, either up or down. And keep the phone, you know, the thermals in the phone are important, for instance, so keep those under control while you're doing this. And if I take example of a home appliance like a refrigerator, you know, with the new smart refrigerator, we can control the motor itself. We can take energy from the wall and convert it to DC. We can control the LED lighting in the fridge, and we can sleep it like a notebook PC level of energy. So, and then the refrigerator has the chance then to be a participant in the home network. So it can also be controlled by potentially the power company.
Right. Now, do you see a level, Larry, at a point where there'll actually be intelligent triage? I mean, because, for example, let's say I'm a municipality and I've got New York, for example, 8 million people. One answer during a heat wave might be to dial everybody's air conditioning down by 5%, but another solution might be just to make sure everybody's wall warts only charge their cell phones in half the time. You know, some other kind of, let's start doing some checks and balances and really start thinking about what's important in the grid and then actually have the systems watch out for that. So, like, during a heat wave, refrigerator and air conditioner important, you know, dishwasher and washing machine can wait till later.
Absolutely. Yeah, dishwasher, washing machine, dryer, there's many things that could wait till later. And frankly, for most, even refrigerator freezers, they may not need to come on right this second. They could wait another 10 or 20 minutes and be just fine. So that intelligent control is very important. And think about plugging your car into charge. And most people would do it at night, but, you know, some won't. So it's going to be a large power draw in a home. And you know, in some cases it can be charged later, in some cases it can't. So the human sometimes has to intervene.
And your systems obviously allow the human to intervene more at a command level and less at an active level.
That is correct. It's more of set your profile of what's acceptable and then have a chance to have exceptions.
I'm sorry, Larry, go ahead.
One other comment, if you look at motors in general, you know, car motor or what's running in your home, you know, some of the new cars have 100 motors. Some of the printers in an office have 28 motors. There's about 10 billion motors a year sold, so, and only 20% of those are electronically controlled. So there's 80% that are on-off switch that are very inefficient. So there's a lot of room out there. A
lot of room. So now what are some of the challenges to the designer involved in creating it? Because, I mean, obviously smart is just an adjective. How smart, how expensive, how fast? What are the challenges to the engineer in dealing with that?
So our, you know, from our perspective, we're essentially a system provider. We provide the chip and software and so forth. And the challenge for us is to find processes that go up to 600 volts, for instance, currently, and much further than that in the future, and have one programming platform. But then we want to provide a solution to someone making, say, a home appliance, where they can have one programming platform throughout their company, whether they're programming charging a phone or an electric car or a dishwasher. And they don't need so many analog engineers after they implement this, so they can focus their time on the software and differentiation.
Well, that makes all the sense in the world because, well, it is such a big endeavor, and the more assistance you can get, or in your case, provide, the better off everyone is.
Yes, and the design time drops, you know, the more you integrate and the more you create a platform, the design time drops, you know, drastically, especially on the second product you make, and third products even more. So you can either make more products you could either make them with less engineers and more efficiently, and in half the time. So it really starts to increase the speed at which design is made.
That makes sense. Well, again, the more people start thinking about common development platform, modular development, scalable systems within a common framework, not only does it aid that device, it aids every other device in the ecosystem.
Yes, that is correct. And when they talk, when they finally connect and communicate, then they're helping each other, which is the intention of it. Like going from, say, our AC to DC wall brick for a phone, talking, as you mentioned, to the cell phone itself and our part, our charger inside the cell phone, they communicate and make a better cooperation, need less power, charge faster. So much more healthy than just a pure analog or power connection.
Exactly, exactly. Now, what other support do you provide to your customers and clients if they come in the door and they need some assistance? What assistance can you provide?
So we tend to provide a solution. So we have the power application controller, one chip that scales in voltage as well as power. The software required for the specific app, whether it's charging a phone or running a motor, are converting 220 volts from the wall to DC volt, they get the whole solution.
Got you, got you. So, Larry, is there anything you'd like to leave our audience with before we close out the episode?
Just the thought that, you know, for us, we are focused on many kinds of end equipment and to save energy, okay, and same time saving cost of the device. With that, our parts will communicate with other companies' parts and other end equipment, and this cooperation is a requirement in the industry. So there's competition, but there's also cooperation.
Well, that's a very good point to make, especially when you think about the fact that since it is all networked, it has to all communicate. I mean, I don't care if you have pixies and angel dust inside the box, the outside of the box has to communicate with all the recognized protocols.
Yeah, absolutely. And with digital control now, you get that communication. It enables it. Digital control of analog power on a platform is who we are.
There you go. Well, thank you very much, Larry. I really appreciate you giving the time to us today to talk about smart power.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Oh, the pleasure is ours. And I'd like to thank everybody out there in the audience. We wouldn't be here without you. Tell your friends. This is Alex Pault for Pault on Power. Have a great day.